Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to episode 29 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashford, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. This is something in between an emergency reaction pod and our regularly scheduled podcast. Things are happening at a very, very quick rate in the major leagues, and the Blue Jays are a part of it, so we thought we'd come to you with the midweek episode. Stoughton, the Blue Jays have Kevin Gausman. What was your first reaction when you saw that deal come down?
I guess it was mostly about, clearly they had interest in him before. Ken Rosenthal tweeted about that. I know Shai Davidi has reported on it before. I think maybe they like him better than Robbie Ray. Because similar deals, obviously not as similar as they look if you don't consider the opt-out or the draft pick the Jays are going to get back from the fact that Seattle signed Robbie Ray. But I think that they viewed them obviously, I think, very similarly and saw a better deal with Gausman than Ray, probably.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we talked about last week. We kind of said, oh, it's going to be one or the other. And when you talk about rumors, sometimes that ends up sounding silly when you hear it back. But that's sort of what happened. Presumably, they could have gotten Ray again. Like you say, the deal is not as similar as it looks on raw dollar terms. Because if you bring Ray back, that's an opportunity cost in terms of the draft pick you do not get. And the opt-out, again, we talked about this last week, opt-out is, it's undoubtedly a negative for the team. And Ray is young enough that if he continues to pitch really well, there's a pretty good chance you don't get the value of the back end of that deal while you're taking on all the risk of the back end of that deal. So if you really believe that Gausman and Ray were approximately the same, which I think is a valid point of view, like we talked about how they profile similarly with the two pitches, with last year being their breakout year, similar ages, but always kind of durable and decent in the past, if not at the level they were in 2021. If you think those guys are about the same, this deal with Gausman is the better deal for the Blue Jays.
I think that's true. Yeah. And it sucks to see Robbie Ray go, and we're going to miss the pants. We're going to miss, and there is a very good chance that Ray is better than Gausman going forward. Like, the Mariners should be real happy about the deal that they have with Ray as well. Like, he was super fun and if he keeps those walks down the way that he did this year, he's a great pitcher. He's going to have a lot of success. I just think that's not the way that the Blue Jays think about value, and I think that they shouldn't think about it in terms of like the sentimentality I'm gonna miss Robbie Ray. They think about it in terms of like, okay, the Gausman deal just makes more sense for them, for sure, especially like considering the draft pick, and this is something I've written a couple times at least. You can feel more comfortable trading away some of your prospects if you know you're getting a couple of picks at the end of the second round or whatever, in the top 100 of the draft, at least. Like, say, I think the compensation pick is going to come after competitive balanced round B, which is usually like the 70 to 80 range. Those are valuable picks. I don't know if I tweeted this or if I deleted this tweet, but like Steve Cohen, the Mets owner, the owner of that Tire Fire franchise, that signed Max Scherzer for an insane deal, which also good for him. was like, oh, draft picks are like worth five times slot value. The slot value of those picks that they're getting back for Semien and Ray are like $4.5 million, which is, you know, that has to factor into the way that they think about these contracts as well. And you know, so considering that Gausman was $5 million less, you get a pick back for losing Ray, which is another almost $5 million. You don't have the opt out, which is, you know, that's more player friendly than team friendly. You know, it's just a better deal for a guy who is arguably as good, just not as you know, not as sentimentally as good.
Yeah, and there's also the aspect of Ray being fantastic to watch. Like, he's so different. You know, we've talked about the pants at length, but also, you know, there's the way he, you know, he grunts like every fastball is him lifting massive weight over his head. Like, there's something dynamic about him that I understand why Blue Jays fans are going to miss seeing him, even if Gausman is effective, because Gausman is, you know, he's a more conventional pitcher. That being said, you know, in a league where kind of the splitter is dying out, and people are talking about this at length, but like, he's got this really dynamic pitch that not a lot of guys throw, and is, you know, I think it was the third best pitch in all of baseball by Baseball Savant's reckoning last season. It's not like they're replacing Robbie Ray with a guy who's like totally bland, you know, just kind of puts his head down and gets the job done. Like, Gausman is exciting in his own right. I understand there are things that make Ray special. There are things that make Gausman special too. It's just that Blue Jays fans haven't been exposed to them as much. But, you know, I expect that there'll be a fair amount of sentiment about, oh, these contracts are the same, and the people probably overestimate the degree to which they're the same. Why didn't they, might as well just brought back the guy we know works well with Pete Walker, the guy we love, the guy who had so much success for the Blue Jays. And I understand that. But like you said, that's not how teams think. Teams think, okay, we need to bring value in. They don't think about necessarily even individual players. They might think of tiers of players. And these guys were very clearly in the same tier. We need a top of the rotation type pitcher. Okay, who's available in that tier? Which deal in that makes the most sense for us? Also, this is presuming that Ray was willing to come back to the Blue Jays for a similar deal, which I am going to treat as a fairly safe assumption, just because I don't think there's a specific reason why he would have wanted to go to the Mariners specifically. So I'm going to assume the Blue Jays could have had him for something like what the Mariners got him for. Yeah. But yeah, I get it. And I think that this deal is preferable with all those bits attached to it, the opt-out and the draft pick compensation, and the fact you could make an argument that Gausman was better than Ray last year, and Ray just feels like a guy who's a little bit riskier going forward with, you know, the max effort of it all, and the fact he hasn't thrown strikes over a long period of time. So, yeah, I understand the bittersweet component of it, but if I'm a Blue Jays fan right now, I'm pretty happy about how this all transpired.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I don't know, talking about it in terms of like how this particular front office views value. It just reminds me of, I forget the actual numbers involved, but like when they traded Stroman and Sanchez, he was like, Ross Atkins being like famously, oh, well, we traded 4 years of control for 45 years of control. It's like, which he got roasted for, rightfully so at the time, but like, that's, you know, that's sort of the prism through which they view stuff like this. And obviously this isn't about a control issue, but that's, you know, they view the components of value in a different way than fans do. I do assume, like you say, like, I don't know, if the Blue Jays offered Ray the deal that the Mariners offered, he would probably be here. And I think I suspect that they chose Gausman, and I know that they liked him last year. Tried to get him for like three years, $40 million last year. They obviously are paying way more. But yeah, I don't know. It's like it's weird to think about like a 5 year, nine figure pitcher deal and being kind of like, all right, that's fine. But it's not that different than the Ryu deal. It's not that different. I mean, the dollars are different, but like, Steven, you had to go to 4 years to get Steven Matz. If you're like this is the world we're living in. Like, 5 years for Gausman sounds a-okay.
Yeah, I think that also in the context of the market heating up over the last couple of days, we saw, you touched on Max Scherzer briefly, the amount of money flying around for Max Scherzer. Which, you know, kudos to him for absolutely annihilating the average annual value record. Because normally what happens, and this is kind of unfortunate for the top end stars in baseball, is that it's hard to really knock the ceiling out. You, like, you creep forward because then your agent gets to say, oh, this guy is the highest paid player in baseball or whatever. But you almost never see, I mean, Alex Rodriguez back in the day, but you almost never see those contracts that just say, you know what, the whole current paradigm is wrong. I'm worth way more than anyone's gotten before. And yeah, tip of the hat to Scherzer for getting that. I do think, and this is going to come up with Semien as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of narrative of, oh, well, these guys are influential in the union and therefore they're doing this for future generations. And this is like, and I'm not saying there's no truth to that. There's absolutely truth to that. But treating taking the biggest amount of money you can get by a significant margin as a noble act struck me as a little bit weird. And I'm saying
they
that
always
a,
do that, right?
From, yeah. Yeah, from a pretty from a pro player position, like I want to see these guys get paid in the coming CBA talks. I want to see the players get a more equitable share of the pie and all that. I don't begrudge them that at all. But it's interesting that the framing has changed so much, especially with certain writers. There's still some really pro-team sentiment out there, but it's changed so much that we're giving guys like enormous kudos on like an ethical level for making a bunch of money. And I'm not 100% sure I'm there.
I know, I see what you're saying, but also, I don't know, just viewed through, you know, where we are, especially Scherzer and Semien in particular, like being on the union executive subcommittee, which is like, what, 8 guys, 12 guys, who are definitely, I mean, there was that great piece, Evan Drellich from The Athletic, I think Bruce Meyer is the name of the guy who is like the union's like chief negotiator, who they hired out of the NHL, or the NHLPA, which very much made it made it sound like they're gearing up for a fight, and he's like, I don't care if nobody likes me, like that's my job is to fight. And I don't know, it seems like I think that the union narrative is there's something to it. And also I think that works both ways a bit too, probably, right? Like I think that going into the lockout that's obviously about to happen, I think teams are behaving in a way where it's like, oh, the system's not broken. Look at this. We just handed out a ton of money, which I think is false as well. Yeah, I don't know. I get that. It's you know, it makes you wonder how much I don't know. It makes me wonder how much players leave on the table to go to teams that aren't tire fires, and if maybe we are seeing a bit of that right now.
Yeah, I mean,
where guys are like taking money from bad teams, knowing that it's going to be a bad thing, but they're just going to take the most money.
And I think it might give them a little bit of a permission structure to do that, right? It gives mm-hmm. them, I'm doing this, and you guys know the other context of this is the CBA stuff that's going on, the union stuff that's going on. You know, it definitely helps from a PR perspective for them. It is jarring to see all these players, like we're seeing Javi Baez go today. You know, we saw the Corey Seager.
Hopefully not to the Jays.
The Corey Seager deal, you know, that's a massive deal to the Rangers. Like, even with Semien and Seager, like, the Rangers and still Gray, they're not
team.
Close to being good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That, this, again, it's not a criticism of them. I get it. They had no contracts on the books. They had virtually no payroll. They do have some money to play with. They thought that some of these guys could be foundational pieces. Seager's a little younger than the average free agent of his caliber. I get that. Semien's, you know, he's a guy who I'm sure they consider to be sort of someone to lay the groundwork for that clubhouse and kind of set expectations and all that jazz. On top of being an incredible player. Like, I'm not trying to position him like he's the Jason Giambi on the bench type guy.
Right.
John Gray's a guy with some upside. Like, I'm not saying these moves make no sense whatsoever, but it is very unusual for us to see, like,
yes.
We often give teams credit when like, oh, they bought a guy a year ahead. Like, oh, the Padres bought Eric Hosmer a year ahead. And we wanted the Blue Jays to do that for a long time. Like, I remember people wanting the Blue Jays to get Bryce Harper. It's like, oh, they're not ready yet, but he's a guy that they can grow into, especially with his age and the fact they had no outfielders, et cetera, et cetera. And then they did do that with Ryu, and they made the playoffs, and that worked as well as you could possibly imagine. But the Rangers aren't buying a year ahead. Like, they might be buying 3 years ahead. Like, this is, it's to the level where you got to wonder if it's the right idea for them. But again, you like to see these guys make this money. And when Seager makes that money, you know, we'll see what Correa gets. Like, it's going to help them down the line. And it's also, I think it lights maybe a little bit of a fire under some of the other bad teams that never spend any money, because if there, the fewer of those teams there are, the less that looks like the norm, and the less that can be deemed acceptable by, you know, fan bases and kind of the baseball world at large.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Yeah, it does seem strange, but yeah, go like don't be the Orioles, don't be bad forever. Like, don't, like, the Rangers could literally have just waited until, I mean, their player development system is not spitting out stars. They could have waited until that happened or started to happen for them. And they didn't. And credit to them for that. Absolutely. I mean, it is weird that it's just, I mean, I suppose it's probably the new stadium that they have. You know, they want to get fans back in there. They sunk a bunch of money into playing in an airplane hangar or a Costco or whatever the hell they do. But yeah, I think that you're right. Like, yeah, the more teams that just view it as imperative to get better faster is good.
Hell, even the Marlins are spending money, which is overt. I mean, I know we saw that in 2012, but that was all just a song and dance. And then the Blue Jays were taking the hit on that in the end. But no, it's great to see. Like, yeah, are the Orioles going to jump in there? Are the Pirates? I don't think so. But I think it's, and it's also just from a Blue Jays perspective, you always have it in your head from a Blue Jays perspective that, you know, the Yankees are going to land the big fish or the Red Sox are going to land the big fish.
So do fans of those teams.
Yeah, very much so to fans of those teams. And I understand that there's the notion that the Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers are cautious in the early going because they don't know where the luxury tax is going to be, which just goes to show the level to which it really is a salary cap of these teams are willing to miss out on. This is one of the best free agent classes we've seen. And all these guys are coming off the board. And if they're willing to sort of straight up miss out on them, it goes to show how seriously they take that. And
100%, yeah.
And the Blue Jays are not seeing these, you know, these great players flood into their division. And, you know, there's still some really good players on the board. And I'm not saying the Yankees aren't going to do anything. The Red Sox aren't going to do anything in the end. It could happen. But
future Red Sox, Marcus Stroman, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
that's a perfect match, really.
Yeah.
Though maybe the Angels, you know, Perry Manassi, you know, going out and getting all his former Jays guys.
Honestly, he's exactly the type of guy the Angels need, like someone who, you don't need an ace, you just need someone you can trust. Anyway, that's neither here nor there, but it has been, I think, a relief to a lot of people who are cheering for the Blue Jays that these teams have not done anything yet, and if they do something, if they make the big splash, they're less likely to get the, you know, the sweetheart deal, because, you know, Correa is going to be the last guy of his caliber, and he's going to be able to set his price to a certain extent. It's not the other way around. Like, there's going to be a landing spot for him that's going to pay him a lot of money. So, it's really unusual, and it has to be considered positive. Like, the Blue Jays once again are the big spenders of their division, which is so bizarre to say after years and years and years and years of that not being the case.
Absolutely, and aren't done. I'm sure. I mean, you don't get Gausman and then just, you know, put your feet up, right? Like, they're, I don't know that it's necessarily going to be. I don't think there's going to be another 5-year deal for, you know, north of $100 million for them, but like I said, you know, with getting the draft picks back makes trading a little bit easier. If you're going to, you know, empty your farm system a little bit, you at least know you're getting, you know, some decent picks back. So obviously they probably need another starter. They need some more help in the bullpen. They need another infielder. I assume that trades are like less likely right now because it's just like the frenzy for the free agents before the lockout. You got to get guys a physical, and you're going to have months and months to like work the phones with other teams and make that happen. But like, yeah, I don't know. I think they are very well positioned at this point. I also just, I don't think that, man, people were talking about after the Gosman reports came out, it's like, well, so they're going to get, can they still bring back Robbie Ray? I'm like, no, I don't think that's on the cards. Like, and I wrote about this, you know, with Gosman and Barrios and Springer in like 2024 and 2025, that's like $65 million on the books for three guys who are going to be in their mid 30s, plus whatever you need to pay to extend Vlad and Bo. You know, like you're sort of starting at a high level of payroll for just five guys already for those like 2 years. So to add another like $25 million to that is going to be tough. I think that's why they're going to look at, I mean, I think that's why Jose Ramirez has obviously been a name that has come up a ton, because not only is he great, but his contract fits their picture very well. And there are other guys like that as well. I don't know if Cleveland really wants to move him. I'm not sure where they're at. They've got the new rebrand. They want to sell some shirts, but yeah, that would be a perfect fit. And I think an outstanding outcome for the offseason if the Jays could make something like that happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think if Cleveland wants to sell some shirts, it would be advisable to have a position player.
Andrew Kirk, baby.
Oh yeah, he can sell some shirts. It worked for me. On the payroll thing, like roster resource, and I know that different sites have different ways of cutting it up, but I kind of looked over what their numbers had. They had the Blue Jays at 141 right now, which is pretty much exactly what they were in 2021. So anything you're building now is an increase on last year's payroll. Now, they've said that they're willing to do that. It's not unreasonable to think they're going to do that. But I think that's a good context to keep in mind. Like anyone you get from here on out, like that is building on what's been there before. So like you said, anything that's a five-year contract that's upwards of $100 million, it'd be a real surprise to see that happen. I think they're next. They probably have one big move left and it might be a trade. And it probably is for that infield spot. Because if you started the season today, and you're starting Biggio at second and Espinal at third, like that's
not quite good enough.
That's the biggest problem that this team has. Like the rotation we talked about last week, in theory, you could roll Stripling out as that five or Pearson out as that five. I know that they want another guy. I think they probably will get another guy. But infield is a spot that feels just undercooked. Like there has to be something else to go on because... Yeah, it'd be really tricky to have, like, you know, Biggio and Espinal both have their uses and are both handy to have around, and even starting one or platooning them somehow is not the worst idea in the world, but having both of them as your starting guys and then working off minimal depth from there, that's a problem.
No, I think that's correct. Yeah. I'm not bothered by the idea of platooning them, or, you know, not necessarily like a straight traditional platoon, but like, I know that, you know, there's matchups that are more favorable to Biggio that are and more favorable to Espinal probably. I think Espinal can hit velocity better than Biggio, but I think that like, yeah, I think that could work in one spot, but yeah, definitely not two. They definitely need to find somebody there. And also platooning them works well enough that like, you know, I don't know if you need to, you need to bring up Moreno at some point and haven't moved out a catcher, they're having him get work in at third base. And, you know, maybe you can get his bat in the lineup that way. Or, you know, Jordan Groshon seems a little like farther away. But there are definitely guys in the system. Kevin Smith, we'll see if Samad Taylor gets taken in the Rule 5. You know, there are definitely options for one, like where one infield spot could be, you know, a place where guys kind of cycle through and you try to find, you know, see who rises to the top. But definitely, I think another one you have to kind of lock down with, ideally someone as good as Marcus Semien,
the third place MVP of 2022 is probably not a to be acquired Blue Jays infielder. That's my guess. It is funny with Semien that basically, there is almost no blowback to him leaving. Like the way that with Ray Gosman, there's some, oh, did they pick the right guy? Why didn't they keep Ray? with Semien, it was basically everyone's like, okay, go get that 7-year contract. That's cool. Like, I don't understand that as a lot of fans are of the opinion that just the contracts don't matter and they're cheering for the players and all the owners have all the money in the world. And there's actually a lot of truth to that worldview. Mm-hmm. We talk about on this podcast how we're not saying that they should or should not spend this money. We're trying to work within the parameters of what we expect them to do, what they've done in the past, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And within those parameters, signing Semien to that deal, in my opinion, just frankly didn't make sense.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I mean, there was a little blowback, you know, towards him about, oh, doesn't want to go to a team that's going to win, doesn't care for winning, just is going to take his money, which, you know.
Again, I would say not necessarily like actively noble, but also doesn't make you a dick. Many people go to professional situations where they aim to make the most money possible, even if it's not perfect in other ways. So yeah, that's a very common thing in the world.
100%. And also, I think the Rangers, you know, clearly are showing, you know, the Seager deal and the Semien deal, like, you know, willing to spend. I think it's still a bad team. I think they're going to be bad for a while. But lots of professional reasons to go there for him. And I thought that the blowback that he got about that was just sort of people rooting for Rogers to like get a discount from him or something. It's like, you know, no, he shouldn't get a discount.
He's also been here for 1 year and isn't from here and doesn't have any specific, like, if he was going to give anyone a discount, it probably wouldn't have been the Blue Jays in the end. Like, true, as much as he was great here, that's just, there's no reason for him to do that. Yeah. He does not deserve any blowback whatsoever. It does kind of remind me more the Seager deal, not his deal. Reminds me a little of the A-Rod deal to the Rangers, where it's like they try and go and buy like this franchise type player and they're just nowhere near being good. And then that player toils in obscurity. I think Blue Jays fans would like to see that.
Corey Seager. Okay.
Yeah. He's a left-handed hitter. Therefore, he's a future Yankee. A left-handed hitter who will cost a lot of money. All of them go to the Yankees.
I mean, the Rangers now need to trade for Joey Gallo. I saw somebody say that on Twitter last night. And it's like, you know what? Yeah, that probably would make some sense.
I do wonder, like, what when they knew when this was going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, they haven't been acting like a team that was going to do this. So right. It's almost like they had a change of heart at some point, and ownership did. And it probably would have been helpful if you were in the baseball operations department to know in advance that this is something that they were aiming to do.
Yeah, if you knew you're going to splash a lot of cash this winter, yeah, why are you trading Gallo? Also, I think a lot of Yankees fans would be like, well, yeah, we'd undo that deal as well.
Yeah, it works for everybody. It's among all these, you know, the splashy deals, one that slipped under the radar is another Blue Jays transaction. I thought that most weeks we'd be praying for just one of these. But Yimi Garcia, 2-year deal with the Blue Jays, club option for a 3rd-year deal. I'm going to just read out the club options parameters because it's a bit weird.
Club/vesting option. Yeah.
Basically, it's a club option with $1 million buyout, but it converts to a $6 million guarantee with 60 innings pitched or 60 games in 2013 or 110 innings pitched or 110 games across 2022 and 2023.
You said 2013, and I'm like, oh, that sounds right. No. I'm like, oh, wait, no. Oh, God.
2023. Sorry. I'm having a hard time grappling with that being a year that's going to exist. Anyway, I think that, you know, it's likely that if he's healthy, he'll hit those targets and it will become a 3-year deal. Because if he's healthy, 55 games a year for a healthy, well-used reliever in kind of the middle innings, I don't think is unreasonable. I don't know. It's interesting. This deal, it seems like a bit of a commitment to a guy who seems like he's just a guy in terms of his results, but... Yeah. There's a little bit more there. He's got the big fastball velocity jump last year, high spin curveball. He's got a bigger repertoire than a lot of relievers. He's got 5 pitches in theory.
It does, yeah.
There's lots of things to like about him. And whenever I see a guy who I see these characteristics of him that are promising and the results don't follow, the obvious conclusion to make is, okay, this guy's not locating the ball. Now, to be fair, that's the truth for a lot of relievers. A lot of relievers just come in
right.
and just pound the zone or around the zone or whatever they can do, because that's the reason they couldn't hack it as starters in the first place. I don't know if this deal should be considered exciting, but this is also, in my view, exactly what they were going to do. I don't think they were ever going to go for Kenley Jansen or Iglesias. I don't think they were going to go buy that extremely expensive back of the rotation, back of the bullpen guy. I know they flirted with Liam Hendricks. That's a different animal. He's sort of head and shoulders above a lot of other guys, and I understand why they saw value there. But when guys are sort of closer to the pack, the value proposition is very different. We knew they were going to spend money elsewhere. We saw them spend money elsewhere. But this is a helpful guy because they needed depth. They needed some guys who can fill some innings. And, you know, maybe they tweak him a little bit and he does better and he ends up as more of an eighth inning, high leverage type of guy. But right now you see him as kind of a solid, dependable middle reliever with a little velocity, which the rest of their bullpen kind of doesn't have because they have a bullpen of weirdos. It's hard to be it's hard to be too against this deal.
Yeah, I agree. It's not a ton of money. 3 years would be a long commitment, and I think you're right. The targets are definitely like achievable for him. But yeah, I'm intrigued by it because obviously, like, you know, they're starting to get mentioned among the teams that are, you know, on the leading edge of just thinking about pitching in like highly developed ways, right? You know, they've got that pitching lab in Dunedin now that the taxpayers in Florida have paid for.
Taxpayers love a good pitching lab.
What an asset to the community. you know, and like Pete Walker, obviously, is great and a huge asset in his own way. I have tried to help pump the brakes on the Pete Walker's magic thing, but I think that the fact that he can get his guys to buy into what the team is trying to help them with and can work with guys and help, you know, interpret what's coming from the guys in the R&D lab and wherever, and to help guys, just maximize what you can get out of them. It doesn't always work, but, you know, huge asset to the team that way. And I think that Garcia definitely seems like a guy. I mean, I think that's what's intriguing about it, is that like he definitely seems like a guy that they probably have identified something they think that they can help and make better for him. And so maybe there is more potential than what we see. I mean, he was the closer for the Marlins. I mean, the Marlins were not great. It started last year, and then I don't think he was, you know, some of the numbers went a bit wonky when he went to the Astros last year. But yeah, I think that it's a solid floor, you know, middling reliever floor, and yeah, I suspect they think that this is a guy who they can get more out of. So we'll see. They thought the same about like Shun Yamaguchi. So it doesn't always work.
Yeah, I think he's sort of what very different flavor in terms of the stuff he brings to the table, but results wise and sort of the way he projects. He's kind of what they've wanted to get out of David Phelps the million times they've signed him, including this week.
Which they just also did, right?
Yeah,
he's coming back too.
We'll get to that. It's funny, we're never going to be privy to the Pete Walker contract situation, but I do find myself wondering, first of all, what it is, and secondly, sort of the effect of all this PR that he's gotten. And like you said, it's been kind of singularly on him in a way that's not really accurate. And that's not to take anything away from him. I'm sure he's very good at his job, but there are other people in play. It's a whole system, and he's the head of the snake.
Yes, but, exactly. Yeah.
But I do wonder when Pete Walker's contract comes up, sort of all the ammunition that he's got in his pocket as a result of the fact that everyone in this entire city and parts of the entire country seem to believe that he's the ultimate genius in his craft.
That's a great question. But also, I wonder if the Jays would just walk away at that point and be like, all right, well, Matt Bushman, here you go.
Matt Bushman is the Kevin Gausman to Pete Walker's Robbie Ray.
But no, but it's definitely like, it's definitely a system, and it's definitely something that has been well thought out, since day one of Atkins and Shapiro arriving, you know, having not just, like player development generally means like, minor leaguers, or, you know, I think most people think of it when you talk about it that way, but it's really not. And I think they are, you know, they're having a ton of stuff in place to just maximize what guys can get out of themselves and are also, and I think this is something that Atkin said on the At the Letters podcast that I wrote up a thing about right around the time we had Ben on a couple weeks ago, where he was just like, now, like, or I think he praised Tampa and Cleveland for being like, oh, now, like, acquisition is aligned with, you know, how all the other systems are in place. And I think that that's sort of the place where the Blue Jays are trying to get to and maybe are, where they can pick and choose the guys that they want to have, who they think they're, you know, who will work well within their system. And I think both Gausman and Garcia are probably examples of that. But we'll see. We don't know. It's a black box.
Yeah, and it's something that's been going on with them or been something they think about for a long time. Like, I remember in 2019, I wrote a piece kind of about this, about how the Blue Jays target pitchers and that they're looking to extract him and things about it. It's funny, that piece was written about the acquisition of, and you may well not even remember this name, Nick Kingham. But anyway, he was, you know, he was a guy from the Pirates who kind of had a pretty big arm. And he was a guy that just on paper, there was no reason to acquire. That was kind of the premise of my story. Like, there's no reason to acquire this guy based on anything he's done. But nowadays we're looking at traits and we're trying to tinker, and that's where they were trying to go. And right. At that point, they had a lot of confidence in what they were doing. Matt Bushman had come on. It was clear that the whole thing was getting a little bit more advanced, but they didn't have a good proof of concept yet. And then over the past couple of years, we're starting to see that proof of concept. But this has been, it's been in the works for a while because they've seen other teams do it. I mean, Trent Thornton was a little bit this guy. If you look at Trent Thornton's results across his minor league career, they don't really jump off the page. He was an acquisition based on the traits of his stuff, which, you know, he had a pretty solid rookie season as a starter. So I don't want to totally bury him, but he was bad in relief last year. And there's an argument to be made that that acquisition hasn't worked out. And that's sort of one of the early ones. And now we're later in the process and it seems like they're getting better at it. And like you said, it doesn't always work out. And I think that, again, the legend of Pete Walker grows and the assumption that the Blue Jays get any pitcher and that pitcher is going to be outstanding is an unfair assumption because they're not by far the smartest team in the league. There are many teams who evaluate these players on the same parameters. And it's not like the Blue Jays are seeing stuff that only they see and everyone else is light years behind them. They're one of quite a few teams who think this way and try and act this way. And right now they just look like one of the better ones at executing.
Yeah, I think that's right. And partly it's just that over time, they've developed those systems that have gotten to that point. But also you kind of like, you have to do that just to keep up, especially when you're, even though it's been nice to see them spend and they've handed out $300 million contracts in the last, in the calendar year 2021, which is insane to think, having watched this team for the last 20 years or 40 years or however many years it's been. They're definitely doing things like a bigger market team, but they're not, and they're not one, I don't think, quite yet, especially in terms of like under the hood stuff. So yeah, the Dodgers will win every year if you don't try to compete with them, or the stupid Rays, who are, I can't even with the Rays. Corey Kluber, nice signing for them. The Wander Franco deal will be very, very valuable to whoever trades for him in 3 years. But yeah, I think, I don't know. Yeah. So they don't deserve too much credit for having, I guess, the Blue Jays having having developed their aligned their development and pitch lab and all that. And acquisition. I don't want to use the terms that like Ross Atkins would use, like the boardroom speak, but they deserve some credit for that. But I think that that's also just, you got to keep up with the trends in the industry.
Yeah, the Blue Jays want to be like, they're not going to outspend the Yankees unless the Yankees, I don't know, something
to not spend.
Yeah, yeah. I guess. But in theoretically, the Yankees will continue to outspend the Red Sox. Will likely continue to outspend them more often than not, maybe not every year, there'll be dips, whatever. So they have to have a little bit of the Rays in them. And that's what the Dodgers try to do, right? The Dodgers try to be the Yankees and the Rays at once. And the Blue Jays are probably trying to be 80% Yankees, 20% Rays, which is, you know, a much better version of that than they used to be. And I understand why, you know, it'd be great if they could be the Dodgers and they could be 100% of both. You know, right now the resources aren't there for that. Who's to say someday that things change? But it's
when Eddie buys the team.
Yeah, when we get the ear of Eddie, maybe it'll be different. Before we get out of here, just a quick, again, you know, we love transactions, you love transactions. Anything pop off the page for you with the Blue Jays minor league transactions, guys invited to spring training? I know we touched on David Phelps, the love that never ends between the Blue Jays front office and David Phelps. But
I mean, a couple other guys. Phelps, Malik Smith, I thought was interesting. I mean, because they went out and got Gerard Dyson last fall. I don't know, this fall. Well, I don't in August or whenever. And it was like they already had Malik Smith in the system. It's like, I don't know, that seems like a guy who could provide as much value as Dyson. He may not, I don't know. He may not be as instinctual a base stealer, but you know, the tools seemed similar. It seemed odd that they would go and do that when they had him there. And it's interesting that they have brought Smith back, I would say. I don't know if that means, you know, he has any sort of a future here, but I don't know. You could do worse for like a sixth outfielder. But also Phelps, I think, is the interesting one.
Yeah, and Phelps will make a little bit of money if he makes a team. That's one of the ones where, you know, I think they have an eye on him making the team. Not that it's going to be guaranteed to him by any means, but, you know, Malik Smith feels like that. We got a million injuries, therefore, here's a guy that we have. Like, we can put him in. A couple other names that popped out to me. Jose De Leon. Now he was a big time prospect for a while. Yeah. This guy was a top 30 prospect. That was a while ago. That's 4 or 5 years ago, to be fair. But he's someone that they wanted to keep as a starter for as long as possible because that's the way his stuff profiled, and that was the best way to get maximum value from him. And now they relatively recently has gone into relief. And, you know, he doesn't throw crazy hard. He doesn't have unbelievable stuff. He has a pretty intriguing changeup. I don't know. He's a guy that has had some talent at some point. Like, not a true nobody, which is normally what you see from these signings. His results last year weren't great. But, you know, that's a name to watch in the broadest terms. And then if I were going to give you kind of a truly out-of-nowhere name, I would say Matt Gage. And he's actually never appeared in the major leagues, but he's another guy who was a starter for the vast majority of his career in the minor leagues, and it just didn't really work out. He went to Mexico in 2019, and then in 2021 he came back, and he was used exclusively as a reliever for the first time and started to throw up some big strikeout numbers. And again, you know, that's just a little bit of a statistical profile. Could and probably will be nothing, but I do like to see those guys whose track record isn't necessarily reflective of what they are now. And it seems like he's kind of a different guy now than potentially he used to be. But if you're putting, you know, don't buy the jersey yet. I know it's tempting.
Gage jersey, yeah.
I know that whenever you guys see the Blue Jays tweet out their list of spring training invites, you're ordering 7 custom jerseys to your house. But I would urge caution on this one individually.
I mean, hey, David Phelps, I think he can feel pretty good about if he's healthy, he'll make the team, which I think is a nice addition. But also, I mean, that also complicates things because now they got a bunch of guys who they either A, won't want to option down to the minors. Like, you could theoretically option Romano and Tim Meza, but they're too important. And, you know, now they have Romano, Meza, Simber, Richards, Yimi Garcia, presumably David Phelps. Running out of spots at that point for your Nate Pearsons, your Julian Merriweathers, and, you know, on down the list, which should be interesting. But not the worst problem to have for a bullpen that obviously was a gigantic problem last year.
Yeah, a little depth never hurt anyone, and they didn't really have it last year, and that was it. Ended up being a big problem.
Sorry, Trent Thornton, you might have to pitch in Buffalo.
Yeah, I don't know. The less said about Trent Thornton's 2021, the better. I think we will leave it there. Hope you guys enjoyed the surprise midweek Blue Jays happy hour. There's never a bad day of the week for happy hour, and I hope you guys will join us next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.